So excited to be on here. Excited for everybody that has joined us here for the live monthly market report. I'm joined along with KCM founder Steve Harney. Steve, it's good to be on here today and good to get to share this monthly market report and do it together.
Yeah, you're doing a great job, and the KCM crew is doing a great job of putting together some remarkable information in some very trying times. So, you know, thank you very much, David, for helping the industry as much as you are, and say the same thing to the whole KCM crew.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As we put these together each month for you, you know, we go back and we look at what's happened to give you the most up-to-date look at the market. And like you said, Steve, the KCM crew deserves the credit for all the hard work that goes into writing, researching, and developing all of this information. So with that as a backdrop, let's go ahead and get started and let's talk about what's happening in the market today. So I want to start here with a quote from Ivy Zelman. If you've been listening to the monthly market report for a while, you're familiar with Ivy. And she says here, housing will fare better than expected during this severe downturn. So, you know, if I were to start us out today, I would say that, you know, as we look at experts, we're seeing them say, okay, you know, as the economy starts to improve, and we've talked about this, you know, improving in the second half of this year, housing faring better than, you know, than maybe other industries during this downturn. And to take that a step further, I want to bring in some information. Start here with Diana Olnick, and she says new home sales rose slightly in April, defying expectations of a huge 22% drop. So the news there is, you know, there was a slight improvement, but more than that, there was an expectation of a 22% drop in April. And now that we're looking at that information in the rearview mirror, we can see that home sales actually rose. Really, you know, a tribute to the continuation of how we started this year. And I'm not saying that we're where we would have been had we not been into the health crisis in this country, but we certainly have, you know, in this example, where there was an expectation of a decrease, new home sales actually rose. She goes on to say, mortgage demand from home buyers shows unexpectedly strong and quick recovery. And the quick recovery has surprised most forecasters. And I would say to that, those of you that have been listening to the monthly market report and stuck your neck out there and, you know, went out on a limb and talked about, you know, hey, when we're able to get back out, we're going to see the market return, and maybe took some fire for that. It didn't surprise you. And yet people that said, you know, 2-3 months ago that our business was dead, we're starting to see that come back. And so I'm excited to share that information with you. To carry it even a step further, Mark Fleming says, we know that April really was the trough, I think, for the housing market. So looking in the rearview mirror, we can see that April was the trough. And you know, coming out of April, we can see, okay, we're starting to improve. Not quite where we, you know, would have been had this not taken place, but we can certainly see improvement. He goes on to say, we do expect the rebound to be quite strong in the May numbers that will come out at the end of June. So right now we want to look at leading indicators. We want to really say, okay, what is this going to do for pricing? And we have our first look at projected home price appreciation. And I want to bring that in here. And what we have here and what you can see is six experts, leading experts that project appreciation. And here this year, you can see five of the six experts are calling for appreciation. This year, three of those five are calling for appreciation over 3%. As we go into next year, into 2021, we can see that all six are forecasting appreciation, and even some going into 2022 forecasting appreciation. Really, the story right now on pricing is that appreciation is being driven by the lack of supply across the country. You know, across the country right now, we have a little more than 4 months of inventory on the market of available homes for the number of people that want to buy them, literally an undersupply of homes on the market. And that's certainly going to vary depending on where you're at and in the price point in that market or in your market. But suffice it to say that upward pressure is being applied to prices today, which is driving us forward there. And so as we go through, you know, the next few months, we're going to bring updates to to you relative to home price projections, but this is the initial look at what experts are saying around pricing and what we can expect going throughout this year and into next. We know from Zillow's June report that month over month, newly pending sales are up 24.5%, and new listings taken are up 19.3%. So we're not where we, you know, where we would be normally this time of year, but month over month, we're seeing improvement. This isn't year over year. This is month over month, but seeing improvement there, but still need more distance to cover, especially in listings across the country. They go on to say both pending sales and new listings remain well up from the previous month when the market was bouncing back from a slowdown in the early days of the coronavirus pandemic. So all this information, as we started out with Ivy's quote saying, you know, housing will fare better as businesses start to open up, as the economy starts to, you know, to start to gain steam again, and, you know, experts are projecting that recovery. You know, really, we believe that, you know, housing will lead that recovery, and that housing will drive the U.S. economy forward as we go into the second half of 2020. So, Steve, I want to bring you in and talk about this question of unemployment. It's been a big question that we've been following for the last couple of months.
Yeah, the Bureau of Labor Statistics on Friday released their June report, which covers, you know, up until the middle of May, from the middle of April to the middle of May. And the biggest shock on that was the gains. There was actually a gain in number of jobs. Most people had projected the other way. But what we can see in most of the categories, there were actually job gains equaling up to 2.5 million. We had talked to you earlier about, we believe very strongly that the food service and bars, the bartenders and the servers and restaurants, once they started opening the restaurants up, they were going to come back. Even with the social distancing, a lot of local governments are making sure that they are trying to help restaurants as much as possible, in some cases closing streets and allowing tables out in the street for people to sit in, in order to drive that business. And what we've seen is 1.4 million of those people have already come back to work. As we told you, construction, education, health services, the doctor's offices are opening back up again. The dentists are open back up again. So the education and health services are there. One thing that we didn't get right was the fact that we thought people were going to be very, very hesitant to go out and shop. So we didn't realize the retail jobs would come back as strong as they did. But it seems that after being pent up in your house for 90 days, the American people decided, you know what, let's go shopping. And we're seeing unbelievable numbers being reported. Even early this morning, Macy's reported that their numbers that they have right now, the amount of sales they're making on a daily basis, is blowing away their projections. So what we're seeing is the economy is coming back. And when the economy is coming back, the job market's coming back. If we go over to the red bars, we see all others. Many of those jobs are in the mining industry. The pandemic didn't really impact that. They were losing jobs for years already. The hotel industry is still struggling to come back. There's no question about that. And what's taken place on the government side is a lot of local governments, because your local and state government workers, because of the pandemic, they lost their job. And we know that's temporary. All right. We know that once the money's come back into the coffers and they're not worried about, you know, spending money on the healthcare issues and things like that as much, we know that those government jobs are going to come back too. So it was a very solid jobs report. As a matter of fact, CNBC said this: the May gain was by far the biggest 1 month job surge in U.S. history since at least 1939. And that's a pretty big statement. Now, obviously, we're coming off one of the worst situations. So to surge up, we have to look at saying, all right, that's because it was so far down. But the most amazing thing is it happened when much sooner than most people projected it was going to happen. And we also have to realize that if we take a look at the unemployment, temporary versus the unemployment rate first, and then temporary versus permanent, the unemployment rate, and David's going to, you know, touch on this in a second, that was reported was 13.3%. And again, David's going to touch on that in a second. But that's still the unemployment rate by the BLS. That's what they're announcing. That means that 87.7% of the people still have a job. I think we spend too much time thinking that everyone's unemployed. And I'm not saying that if there's one family unemployed, you know, that's a challenge. If there are millions of families unemployed, that's a dramatic challenge. I'm not dismissing the 13.3%. What I'm saying is, let's not get so caught up in that that we, you know, don't realize that the vast majority of Americans still do have their job. And of those people that are unemployed, 17% think it's permanent. 73% think that as the economy opens up, they're going to go right back to the same job they had. That number changed a little bit from the last report. If you remember, the last time was only 10% of the people thought they were permanent. And we told you, we thought that was a little bit optimistic. Well, it turned out to be the case. But now that 73% that think it's temporary totally aligns with a second report that came out. At, you know, this is what the previous slide showed, what the workers thought. 73% thought it was temporary. In a report from the Federal Reserve Bank, said that 75% of the job losses are temporary layoffs and furloughs, according to the employers. So the employees think, 73% of the employees think it's temporary. And the employers think that of the people they laid off, 75% are coming back. 3 out of 4 are coming back. So what we see there, ladies and gentlemen, is jobs are coming back, 3 out of 4. And then we have to also realize that different companies are actually hiring. That same Federal Reserve Bank report said there are news reports of large-scale hiring at firms like Amazon, Walmart, CVS Healthcare, Domino's Pizza, and other companies that saw increased demand in reaction to the pandemic and partial slowdown. And I can tell you that Amazon, which was about 175,000 people they hired, drivers, warehouse workers, management staff to handle that, they've already said that about 150 of the 175,000 are going to be permanent positions, not temporary positions. So the, you know, job market is looking much, much better. But David's going to explain to you that we can't get too excited about the 13.3% number. And David, why don't you explain what happened?
Sure, Steve. I think there's a lot of talk about this jobs report, and no doubt you've heard that. And some have said, you know, was there a miscalculation in the jobs report? You know, I would offer that there was a misclassification of that. And so let's talk about that, because the KCM research team has put together a visual that really helps explain this. But let me read this first. It says, some people who should have been classified as temporarily unemployed during the shutdown were instead misclassified as employed, but absent for other reasons. Okay, so what are they saying there? They're saying some people that were classified as, that should have been classified as unemployed, checked the box and said, you know what, I'm actually absent, but it's for another reason. Maybe misunderstanding the question, maybe saying, hey, I'm gonna go back to my job when I'm able to, when the business, you know, resumes, you know, activity and we can get back to work. We don't know the exact reason for there. And this isn't something that I would say was caught or was an aha. This was a note inside the report on Friday of this potential misclassification. Now, to be clear, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has not changed the unemployment report. If they, as of the recording of this here, if they change that, we'll bring that to you. But to go on further, it says other reasons are usually people taking leave to go on vacation, serve on jury duty, or take care of a child or relative. So we can see there's this question of classification. Some saying, you know, it should have been temporary unemployed. You know, the reality that it may have been marked as absent for another reason is really what the classification question is. So what the KCM research team and content team went back and did is they went back and looked at what that would look like adding back in those people that could have been misclassified. And I want to give that to you here. And this is the unemployment rate and showing how it improved either way you look at it. So let me break this down. The blue here on this graph shows January through May and the unemployment report as it has been reported. You can see, you know, when we first started talking about this relative to the pandemic, in March, we were at 4.4% unemployment, April 14.7%, and then we saw this decrease in May of 13.3%. If we're going to go back and say there was a misclassification error, we'd have to go back to March and then add in what was the misclassification. You can see that there in orange. It would have bumped up the unemployment rate each month slightly. But the big news here is whether either way you look at it, unemployment dropped in the month of May because there were more jobs added. And if you look at the original number, you know, that we're at in 14.7 going to 13.3, you see that drop. There's even a bigger drop if you add the miscalculation in there. So it brings context to the story of the unemployment rate and how it improved regardless of how the classification would go. And like Steve said, the fact that there are roughly across the country 21 million families and individuals that are unemployed, that's a big number. And we certainly hope that these numbers continue to decrease and folks that are seeking employment either, you know, go back to their job or, you know, are returned off furlough or find another job. And that is our hope for them. But let's talk about what's not in question. This was, you know, reported by the Wall Street Journal. What's not in question is that employers added 2.5 million jobs, which blew Wall Street expectations out of the water. And economists had forecasted a loss of 8.3 million jobs. So going into this May report, the forecast was we're going to lose 8.3 million jobs, or that's what the market was expecting. Instead, we added 2.5 million jobs. Again, that's not in question. The actual rate is in question, and as of today, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has not changed that. But we're going to stay on that. We're going to follow that. But it gives a little bit of context that we're able to clarify that to people that, you know, maybe are saying, hey, this is something, or it was reported incorrectly, or it was miscalculated. There actually was a misclassification in the jobs report. So as we move forward, you know, we're here in June in this monthly market report, and June is National Homeownership Month. And, you know, all the reasons that we know, and I would argue that we all got in the business to help people achieve the dream of homeownership is what we want to give you some information to talk about in that and cover some data relative to that. And the census came out with the first quarter results this year showing that the U.S. home ownership rate continues to grow. And we know that, you know, home ownership was growing up until, you know, the housing crash. And then we saw the decrease, as you can see there on the red line, and then this increase for the last 4 years of homeownership growing. And, you know, celebrating all the reasons that homeownership is growing is what National Homeownership Month is all about. You know, really looking at, you know, homeownership being a reflection of accomplishments, of your effort and success. You know, stability, controlling, you know, your future and direction of that. Your ability to personally express yourself through, you know, what you do in your home and the things that you create and have in there and ultimately privacy, creating a space that is solely your own. And certainly there are a lot of people coming out of this time period that we're in that may be saying, hey, I want something different in a home. We want to downsize. We need more space. We have different needs that we didn't consider important, you know, 30, 60, 90 days ago as we've gone through this. And lastly, National Homeownership Month, I think we know this and we talk about it a lot, the financial investment and growing the asset value and wealth literally for individuals and families all across this country and the value that homeownership brings to that. You know, the survey from Concentric Analytics here talks about the non-financial benefits of homeownership, which I would argue that we need to remind people of that. In this study, you know, when I see it, it makes me happy to know that 93% said owning a home made them happier. 88% of people studied here said buying a home was the best decision they've ever made. And 79% said, you know, owning a home has changed them for the better. And so while we talk about a lot of the, you know, the financial benefits and are familiar with those and the, you know, the ability to build wealth and the tax savings, the ability to refinance your mortgage right now and save money there, financial benefits, but also keeping in mind the non-financial benefits is critically important as we go through June, National Homeownership Month. And most recently, Gallup released their survey of best long-term investments. And they say here, real estate at 35% remains the most favored investments to Americans, as has been the case since 2013 when the housing market was on the rebound. More than a third of Americans have named real estate as the top investment since 2016. And here's a look at that right here, showing America's, you know, top four choices. You can see their real estate far out, surpasses stocks, savings accounts, and gold. And if we even look at this as, you know, what does that look like over time? This is a great picture here where we see, you know, going into this year that stocks lost, some favorability among people. And we know the reason for that in as far as investments. We also know that the housing market remains a strong choice for long-term investment. And so our job today is to get that information out and remind people why folks buy homes more than any time, I would argue. But I want to kind of round out here and wrap up today with what we need to do right now. And I want to bring in a quote from Peter Kahn, who's a former editor at the Wall Street Journal. And he says, "Truth is attainable by laying fact upon fact upon fact. And through the monthly market report, we want to give you those facts so that you can deliver the truth out into the market, you know, and be a voice for what is happening in our country relative to the housing market growth as the economy starts to rebound. You know, experts, as we started this off, agree that housing is going to fare better and likely lead the way in economic recovery. And they also agree that the U.S. economy will not recover until housing recovers. So we have a big job there. We have the responsibility to lead the U.S. economy forward. And I know you got a lot on your plate, but that's one more thing. And to that end, I want to remind you of one more thing, and that's the economic impact that we have in our industry through one home sold. And you can see here, $88,000, just over $88,000 is the economic impact. That's of one new home sold. You can go there and you look at the numbers. An existing home is about half of that in about $45,000 roughly in economic impact. And that's what happens each time somebody makes a decision to purchase a home, spurring economic growth in the towns, the states, and you know areas that we live in across this country. And we can go by state and see, what does that mean for us? What is the economic impact in my state of a new home sold? And so hope you'll use that to get that message out there and share with people what is happening. As we wrap up today, this monthly market report, I want to remind you that the summer 2020 buyer and seller guides are now available, and they've been updated by our research team. Really, we took a look at what we're doing to try to give you the information you needed to be able to talk to your buyers and sellers that they can use to understand what's happening in this market. So we talk a lot about why this is in 2008, the value of buying a home today. And so I know you'll want to check those out, and just a reminder that those are there. So with that, I'm going to wrap up this monthly market report. I appreciate you investing this time in understanding what's happening in the market, really going through all of those so that you can deliver that truth to the clients that you serve. So I appreciate you joining, and have a great rest of your day. And thank you.